Kentucky's only publicly funded, historically black university is celebrating its 130th anniversary this year. Over the past 13 decades, alumni from Kentucky State University have made major contributions to our society, and the university itself has had a continuing impact. Despite its rich history of success, Kentucky State's president says the school's future is in jeopardy due to decreased funding and lower enrollment. On today's Eastern Standard, Kentucky State University, in light of the budget cuts proposed by Governor Matt Bevin, we're interested in your questions, comments, or stories. Write to us by email at wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Post your comment to the WEKU Facebook page or send a tweet at WEKUEST. In a little while, we'll open the phones as well. It's time for Eastern Standard, right after the latest news from NPR. From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen. Apologizing for the quality of my voice as we begin this week's program, but we're going to hopefully hear the voices of others during the next hour. We hope that you'll be participating in our conversation. Governor Matt Bevin last month laid out his proposed biennial budget for the Commonwealth of Kentucky. It's a budget that includes major cuts to some areas of funding provided by the state, including higher education. Although all of our state's universities have begun preparations for reductions, and each will see some effects of the cuts over the next 2 years, this year's round of proposed budget cuts could be too much for Kentucky's only publicly historically funded or historically black university, Kentucky State University. With us in the studio today are guests from Kentucky State University, but we are going to begin our conversation by talking a little bit more generally about the governor's proposed budget and its impact on higher education, beginning with Dr. Aaron Thompson, currently Executive Vice President of the Council for Postsecondary Education, for which he has spent his time in Frankfurt advocating for higher education during this year's legislative session. Dr. Thompson is on leave from his position as a professor in the Department of Educational Leadership and Policy Studies at Eastern Kentucky University. Dr. Aaron Thompson, welcome back to Eastern Standard. It's been a while since we've spoken. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, John. Good to hear your voice. It has been a while. It's good to be on your show.
Well, I look forward to you getting a chance to hear my real voice soon.
I remember what it sounds like, by the way.
Thank you. Also with us is Jim Waters. Jim is no stranger to the WEKU studios as well. Jim is president of the Bluegrass Institute for Public Policy Solutions. Jim Waters spent more than two decades in newspapers and radio stations as a reporter, editor, and anchor at the Bluegrass Institute. Jim works with Kentuckians, grassroots organizations, and business owners to advance freedom and prosperity by promoting free market capitalism, smaller government, and the defense of personal liberties. Jim Waters, thank you for being with us, visiting from Bowling Green today.
Thanks for having me. Always great to be here. Thanks.
Jim, let's begin with you by talking about, in general terms, Governor Bevin's proposed budget. And the budget talks about a 4.5% cut in the first 6 months, essentially the remainder of this fiscal year, and then 9% cut to various programs per year after that. And supposedly that those cuts affecting higher education as well. I assume that given your position on so many issues, you're a supporter of those budget cuts?
Well, what we're a supporter of is prioritizing funding. And we have issues that are facing the Commonwealth that have to be dealt with. And among those, of course, is the public pension crisis that we have here. And so, you know, government is pretty limited on how it can find new revenue. And I think there's general agreement that some new revenue needs to be found in order to properly fund the pension systems, the Kentucky employee retirement system, the teachers' retirement system. And one of the, you know, there's tax increases, there's borrowing, and there's cutting spending in other areas. And the governor has chosen to take that route to cut spending in some other areas in order to add $1.1 billion to pension funding in this upcoming budget. So it had to come from somewhere. There was general agreement that the pension issue had to be dealt with. I think where the discussion and debate will be had, and it's important to remember that the governor presents his proposed budget, and then it's up to the legislature to to actually pass a budget. So, you know, the discussion will be where do those cuts come from, and are these the right priorities? And so we support the idea that you have to prioritize spending and that there's going to be some things more important than others in this budget.
Am I correct that the governor's budget assumed an across-the-board cut of programs from the state within these percentages?
With some exceptions. The SEEK funding, for example, for K-12 education actually got a boost because of the expected increase in enrollment in our K-12 system. So I think there was, and there were some other areas that were exempted as well, and some areas that got increases with social workers, with law enforcement. So I think there was some attempt with a very constrained budget situation to try to be thoughtful about the process and do the best that they could with what they had to work with.
Dr. Aaron Thompson of the Council for Postsecondary Education, does the council take a position on these budget cuts? And what is your assessment of what these budget cuts will mean for postsecondary education in Kentucky?
Sure. I want to start out by saying I do agree with Jim, by the way. I think the governor is taking a stance that the pension is top on his list of items to address, and I applaud him and the council as well as our presidents applaud that as one of his top priorities. We have to do something. Where we probably would differ a little bit, and by the way, and the governor has been really, he's been willing to show that he's willing to have a conversation with higher education officials and talking about how we can mitigate some of these cuts. And as Jim's also correct about, this is in the hands of the legislature now. But for us, obviously, our job is to advocate for funding for higher ed. And in the last 7 years, we've been cut. And our position is fairly clear that higher education is a solution to many of the issues that plague the state. I mean, there's a direct correlation between, you know, education and those, or lack of education, and those that are in our prison systems that are taking dollars away. There's a direct correlation between good education and, you know, those who are on our Medicaid rolls. So our objective is to try to get funding for higher education in order to increase the capacity of economic development, workforce development for the state. So obviously we would not like to see higher education bear a huge brunt of the cuts in order to help what the governor is obviously trying to address.
Aaron, the president of Kentucky State University, essentially the topic of our program this week, President Raymond Burse made a statement that these budget cuts could be essentially a fatal blow to his institution, could basically mean the end of this 130-year-old historically black university. How does the Council on Postsecondary Education assess that situation?
Well, the council has been spending, from the time Dr. Burse came in office, we've been working with Dr. Burse hand in hand and trying to address the issues that have plagued K-State for a while, and Dr. Burse is trying to address that. Over the time, obviously, there's been some enrollment decrease in the process of addressing that. And we obviously, in our budget ask for the governor that ended up going to the governor's office, we asked for obviously no cuts for K-State or any of our institutions, but we also asked for special appropriations to Kentucky State for us to work with them and for Dr. Burse and the board of Kentucky State to work to address a solid direction. And we agreed on that solid direction for Kentucky State, not only to survive, but to thrive. Obviously, a budget cut and not getting those dollars have a fairly strong effect on Kentucky State. Now, we're not taking the role that it will destroy Kentucky State. We believe that, in fact, there are people that are willing, including the governor, to look at how we can help this historically strong institution for the state to stay historically, to stay strong in the future. Now, obviously, we know that we're going to have to look at some directions that maybe hadn't been in place in the past. I know Dr. Burse and his board are looking at those directions and as they've been talking with us about that. So we do know the cuts will have an effect, a strong effect. And we know not getting the extra dollars we ask for will also have an effect. So our stance is still that we feel that Kentucky State should not be cut. And, in fact, we hope that we get some extra appropriations, not a lot, that we can work with Kentucky State to put it back on solid footing.
Jim Waters of the Bluegrass Institute, what kind of support is there for providing some help for Kentucky State in this situation?
Well, I think that what should be done is the case should be made to legislators that the universities are actually, in fact, doing what Aaron talked about, and that is that emphasizing how higher education, you know, there's a direct correlation between that and the economic development needs that Kentucky has, the job needs that Kentucky has. And we're very much supportive of the governor's attempt to move the university funding-based system to an outcomes-based system where that will benefit the schools that are really doing a great job of setting their students up to succeed in the marketplace, in the job place, in the future. And I think that's really important that we do that. You know, we talk a lot about incomes and about the funding, and that's important. Education takes funding. I mean, we're going to spend about $5 billion this year on K-12 education, another, $1 billion on higher education. So it does take funding to do that, but I think you know, like the governor said, and it was kind of a tough comment, but he said we're no longer going to fund entities just to remain in existence. They're going to have to show that they're producing outcomes that, you know, that match that need to and show the correlation between a higher education or a higher education degree in Kentucky and a successful career, a successful life. I think that's important.
Aaron Thompson, what about this concept of outcome-based of funding, that those that perform better, the schools that perform better, are more likely to have guaranteed support?
Well, once again, I want to applaud Tim's statement again, because we do believe we are a solution. And you may have seen the report that was released this week that showed that Kentucky has done an outstanding job nationally of producing workforce credentials as well as degrees attained, that has in fact had a great benefit to Kentucky. We did that without outcomes-based funding. But with that being said, what we know is two things. One is that we've taken cuts over the last many years, and we've done efficiencies, and we've targeted fairly well the things that we needed to do in order to help the economy. With that in mind, the presidents and the council also agreed that We probably needed a performance funding model, an outcomes-based funding model, and we proposed that. Now, what we proposed it with was a little bit different than what the governor came back with. We proposed it with having new funds in place in order to, and funds not necessarily new, but replenish part of the funds that have been taken away over the last 7 years to help us to do that, because we believe the best methodology is to have campuses work within or compared to themselves in order to grow, and not already a strapped higher education system competing with each other in order to make that happen. But once again, we do know that we're going to have to look at our programs, that we're going to have to look at those that really have an impact on the economy and the output. We need to do this with employers and a variety of other people. Later. Now, once again, I'm a social scientist, so I do believe employers are telling us that a lot of the degrees that are
Aaron
out
Thompson,
there that may not
Aaron Thompson,
may have an effect.
We're going to have to go. Thank you so much. I know you have to leave. Thank you for being with us on this week's Eastern Standard on WEKU. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. I'm John Hingsberg, and our topic this week, the governor's proposed budget cuts and its impact specifically on Kentucky's publicly funded, historically black college or university, Kentucky State University. And we're going to return to Jim Waters of the Bluegrass Institute later in the program. We want to thank Dr. Aaron Thompson, who is Executive Vice President of the Council for Postsecondary Education, for being with us for the first segment of today's program. And based on the conversation we just had, I want to welcome to the studio two additional guests, Donald Lyons. Mr. Lyons, since his entrance to Kentucky State University as a freshman in 1964, he has held many positions, including library director and athletic director for Kentucky State. He now serves as executive director for the university's foundation and remains active in the university community. Donald Lyons, thank you so much for being with us for this week's program.
Thank you for asking me to be here.
And as the executive director for the foundation, you're involved in raising money for Kentucky State.
Yes, from the standpoint that the foundation is the repository for monies raised by the institution. And most other institutions have a comparable type of entity.
Sure.
Now, we defer at Kentucky State for sure to the president, whomever that may be, as the primary fundraiser. And we take second seat to that. So consequently, the major emphasis on raising monies comes through the president. However, the alumni and others do contribute directly to the foundation. All private monies come to the foundation.
We'll be turning to you for information about the sources of funding for Kentucky State during the remainder of today's program. Ed Poe left Sears and Roebuck to work as director of the Office of Educational Outreach for Kentucky State University, where he served for 14 years. During his tenure, Ed developed Kentucky State's successful Summer Transportation Institute, as well as a program to help minorities and women enter the construction field. Since 2005, Ed Poe has continued his work in empowering Kentucky's youth through his work with the Kiwanis Club of Frankfort, where he now serves on its board of directors. Ed Poe, thank you for being with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Grateful to both of you to be here to talk about Kentucky State. I would imagine both of you are passionate about this school and its role in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Can we talk a little bit about we talk about the funding crisis, the concern about the future of Kentucky State. Why is it important for us to have this historically black college, this university, publicly funded? I know that there's at least one other institution in the state that is primarily a black institution, but it's a private institution. But why is it important to have a publicly funded black university in the Commonwealth of Kentucky and for it to continue? Ed Poe?
Well, if you take a look at the history and the heritage of the university, you can see that many of the African Americans who are first-time attendees at a university are often on the rolls of those students who have come through Kentucky State University. Early on, this was the only institution of higher education that was available for many of these families. And if you take a look today at the student body, we still have quite a few African Americans who are first-time attendees at a higher institution of higher education for their families. I think it's important that we maintain a public institution that makes this available across the nation for these families.
Are you a native of Kentucky yourself?
No, I'm not. Okay. I'm a transplant from Chicago. I came to Kentucky in 1980 via Sears Roebuck and Company.
Uh-huh. I was thinking that was the case. We hadn't talked about it in advance. But again, I know Don Lyons, as you are a native Kentuckian.
Native Kentuckian.
And again, freshman in 1964 at Kentucky State, sounds to me like your life is very much revolved around this school, and it's been a major portion of a major element in what your life has turned out to be.
Correct. In fact, for the last 52 years, going back to the time that I enrolled as a freshman, I've had some relationship or position or role at the institution, and as such, I've been able to see quite a bit of change. I've seen a lot of folks come and go and scenario. But let me go back real quick to the history portion of it. Folks don't quite realize that in the 1800s, the public school systems developed throughout the South. And as a result, these schools, white and black at that point in time, needed teachers. And consequently, no effort was made by our Commonwealth to train these teachers. There were private black colleges. You mentioned one currently today, Simmons University in Louisville. And at one time, Simmons was called the State University of Kentucky, operated by the General Association of quote-unquote colored Baptists. And there were others. There was a school in Lexington, Chandler Normal. There were schools in Hopkinsville. These were colleges, believe it or not. And a group of concerned citizens, primarily educators, came together from 1878 up to 1886 to lobby the state to create a state college to train teachers for the state public schools. And consequently, that's the origin of Kentucky State by state statute in 1886, per se.
And I assume that curriculum has changed evolved over the years.
Right. Over the years, you go from training teachers, and of course, here at Eastern and at Western, Moorhead and Mary, at one time, these institutions were called normal schools. And some of the old teachers who are no longer on this face of the earth went to the normal school, which was a concept where you train teachers in pedagogy, the art and science of how to teach. And as time passed, the institution moved farther from the normal approach, which had been adopted from France, believe it or not. And the system started in a town called Normal, France. We said normal like Versailles, Versailles. But anyway, as time passed, you had other fields and entities added. For example, in 1862 and in 1890, you had the land-grant approach, where you had agriculture, mechanical arts, for the development of, believe it or not, business and industry and farming so that we could feed ultimately the world. And as time passed, you had other degrees and curricula, whether it be nursing, political science, history, criminal justice, sociology, engineering, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. I'm John Hingsbergen, and although I don't quite sound like myself, but I'm encouraging you, our listeners, to be part of the program, to speak up with your questions, your comments, your stories about Kentucky State University or the governor's proposed budget cuts that will have an impact, apparently, on Kentucky State University and other higher education in the Commonwealth. You can write to us by email, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. That's WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Send a tweet at WEKUEST or give us a call, 800-621-8890. That's 800-621-8890. Let's Don Lyons and Ed Poe, let's talk about Kentucky State University today. What is the nature of the service being provided by Kentucky State University? Certainly education has evolved. Education with a focus on the minority community, on black or African American students, has evolved. You come to Eastern Kentucky University, you go to Western, to Moorhead, to Murray State. There certainly are minority students in these other institutions. Why is Kentucky State still needed in the 21st century, Ed Poe?
Well, we're right here in the capital city. You have state government. You have state government workers all around us. If you take a look at the institution of higher education that offers value to its populace, you have to look at Kentucky State University. It is probably one of the most economical ways to obtain a degree from an institution of higher education. State government workers, the accessibility right in the middle of the capital, these all offer a value to the citizens here in Frankfort and Franklin County. The university itself, in my opinion, has to have a relationship with the community, with Frankfort, Franklin County. And I think that's one of the things that is evolving as we speak today. The university and the community coming together to assist each other. And that's one of the things that the Kiwanis Club has been very interested in, and getting the community more involved with Kentucky State University, having the community taking a look at the resources and the assets that are available for use by the community, and vice versa for the Kentucky State University taking a look at how best it can use its resources and its assets for the benefit of the community. I think it's a win-win situation, and in today's times where the budget is going to be tight and you're going to look at prioritizing, I think the community and the university working together is one of the things that gives us some light at the end of the tunnel.
What's the status of the student body, the count of students at Kentucky State right now? And are the students still a majority of them African-American students?
Well, let me speak to that in a holistic standpoint and historical standpoint. Again, when Kentucky State was founded in 1886, there was one other public institution located in Lexington. It was really a part of what we call now Transylvania College. And in 1886, the same year that Kentucky State was founded, the state portion of Transylvania relocated to the general area where UK is now. So you had one state college that serviced one segment of the population, the Caucasian, and then, of course, another state college that serviced the black population, because the laws, well, really at that time, not even the laws, the mores and folkways of the state, the cultural tradition of the state was such that persons of different races could not coexist together, whether it be education, whether it be living, whether it be marriage, whether it be transportation, and on and on and on. So consequently, when the school was started, and this is one of the untaught, unmentioned types of concepts that exist, yes, it was started for the education of black people, but the blacks that were involved, both as president, professors, and even students, if I can say this politely, were very fair-skinned.
Okay.
They were very light. They were the children of mixed-race parents, okay? And one of the lessons I used to give in one of my freshman classes was to put a group of photographs on the table and let the students pick out the president of Kentucky State and the president of UK and the president of Moorhead during that same time. They couldn't do it because they looked alike. So what happened as time progressed, more and more of the general population of blacks began to be educated. And as a result of that, the skin tonation began to brown up a little bit, such as what I am. But this idea of that monolithic black college, or this monolithic historically black college, never did exist, period, in the private colleges for blacks during, really up until the 1920s down south. Most all the faculties were Caucasian. Most, if not every president was Caucasian. So there was always mixture. There was always a degree of coexistence and integration. At Kentucky State, moving fast forward, when I went there in 1964, coming from Lexington, 20 miles, that was the first time in my life I'd ever been taught by a white person or been in a classroom where the students were also black and white. So there's always been mixture. Currently, and since really the last 30 years, roughly half of the students are black and half the students are white. When you look at the faculty is about 96% Caucasian or white and only about 4% black. So historically black college, yes, by definition and by name tag, but at the same time, we have serviced people, citizens, period, no matter what color or what type of background they come from.
So that begs the question, why is Kentucky State needed?
All right,
what is so unique and what is different about the service being provided there?
Again, this question has been raised since the 1940s when the state began to allow blacks to attend institutions that were not at Kentucky State or in Frankfort. And the question always has come up every 10, 15, 20 years. And the answer to that is, okay, why not? You ask why, and the response would be, why not? If indeed, for example, why have a school in the mountains to service people from the mountains? Why have Berea College in this county to serve Appalachia? why have Brandeis to serve the population but would be a historically Jewish institution? So the key is, at a point in time, institutions are institutions. And I don't think Kentucky State and its leadership in recent history has ever stated that we need to be open simply because we were founded to educate black people. Okay. All right, the answer is we need to be open, we need to be operating, we need to be funded because we're educating people, we're educating citizens. Now, because some of us had an affinity to go to Frankfurt rather than for me to stay at home and go to UK, that was just a choice, all right? And that choice still exists. But to say that because black people can go to other schools, why have Kentucky State? That, to me, is a question that was resolved decades ago. It's an institution funded by the state to service the state and service the people of the state and even the nation, because we are a land-grant institution, as is UK. Back in the 1800s, the federal government forced the states to educate people in the areas of agriculture and mechanical arts. And in the South, they chose not to educate black people in those fields. So the federal government mandated that, okay, if you won't do it, say, at UK, then you must do it somewhere else. So you ended up having the concept of 1890 land-grant colleges, where in Kentucky, Tennessee, Arkansas, Carolina, both Carolinas down the pike, you have two land-grant colleges, simply because initially the states wouldn't educate everybody in one place. So therefore, with the land-grant approach and the federal funding, where you're doing research and public service, and we have extension agents at Kentucky State all over the state, as well as UK, there's a service. We have one of the most renowned aquaculture programs in the world, and we have people coming in from all over studying how you can improve the harvesting and the gestation and the marketing sales of shrimp, of paddlefish, and of other types of entities.
One of the things we want to do in the final minutes of today's program, we're due to take a short break. First of all, we want to invite listeners to be part of the show. Write to us at WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com, or call 800-621-8890. Send a tweet at WEKUEST. That phone number again, 800-621-8890. The email, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the specifics of the governor's proposed budget cuts. How many dollars will that reduce the budget? What will that do to Kentucky State University? President Raymond Burse says it's a potential threat to the existence of Kentucky State University. And then we're interested in interacting with our listeners about this topic and the impact on Kentucky State University and other elements of higher education in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. 800-621-8890, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. We're talking about Governor Bevin's proposed budget cuts and their impact on higher education, with a specific focus on Kentucky State University, Kentucky's 130-year-old historically black university based in Frankfort. And I'm John Hingsbergen. With me in the studio, Don Lyons is executive director for the University Foundation at Kentucky State University. Ed Poe, who is works with the Kiwanis Club of Frankfort, and a former staff member at Kentucky State University. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And also Jim Waters of the Bluegrass Institute for Public Policy Solutions still with us on this week's program. Your questions, your comments, your personal stories about Kentucky State are welcome. 800-621-8890, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Let me come back to Don Lyons and Ed Poe. And Don, I know working with the foundation, you may have the information that we're looking for here. When we talk about a 9% cut or even a 4.5% budget cut to Kentucky State University, how many dollars are we talking about? And what does that mean in terms of its percentage impact on the actual budget of Kentucky State University?
Okay, let me first deal with the current year. And Dr. Thompson earlier mentioned that all of the institutions and most of the state agencies must reduce, according to the governor's proposal, by 4.5% by June 30th.
That's this fiscal
this year.
Yeah.
So when you look at the calendar, this is February 18th. you're talking about 4 months and a week and a half that you would have to pretty much take out 4.5%. Now, for Kentucky State, that would mean reducing from state appropriation $23.4 million down to $21.3 million. So you're talking about eliminating well over $1 million in the next 4 months. Now, that's hard to do. That's hard to do. It means layoffs. It means curtailing certain types of activities, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
What is the overall budget for the university?
Right. The overall budget for the university currently is about $62 million.
So we're talking about $1 million out of the $62
million. Yeah, but now that budget. $62 million includes the tuition and fees, room and board, and the federal money received for land-grant programs. The state appropriation is only $23.4 million. Right. So it would be a drastic thing in 4 months to cut. Now, one of the debates and one of the argument points, and I know Mr. Waters has heard it, that, okay, it's not generally known and done that you cut a budget when you're not suffering from a lack of revenue, and consequently, the revenue for this current year is there statewide. And, of course, going forward, it's projected that there'll be $200 million more in revenue. So in order to rescue the pension funds and so forth and so on, you have a shifting of resources. Nobody's debating that resources sometimes have to be shifted. But the major point of discussion is how much and when. How much and when would it be done?
And when we talk about the potential 9% budget cut for the next fiscal year, which would begin in July, are we talking doubling the million or so, or is it even a greater impact? Is it more like $3 million impacting Kentucky State?
Right. Basically, if you're going to the what's recommended by the governor for 16-17, you're talking about going from a request of $29 million down to something like $21 million. So that's $8 million that you would have to make up one way or the other if those full cuts came to fruition.
And this is where President Burse says this threatens the existence of Kentucky State University, its ability to function.
Right. And basically at the end of that two-year cycle, you're talking about the state appropriation going down to $14 million from the current $23 million, all right? So that's basically a $9 million reduction. Now, it's understood that, yeah, there'll be performance funding, and nobody really objects to performance funding if it's well thought out, well planned, people buy into it, and everybody has their little niches, and you go to it. Nothing wrong with that. On the campuses themselves, as you probably know from Eastern, performance funding has always existed. If a department is not putting out, if people are not graduating, if they're not recruiting students, you don't get that money. It's given to somebody else. So consequently, Mr. Burse's statement was a hypothetical point that was made that if in the worst case all of the cuts that were proposed come to fruition, it would be very difficult to substitute another $9 million for the $9 million lost.
Let me invite our listeners again to be part of the conversation. If you have a story, a question, a comment about this topic, funding for higher education and its impact on Kentucky State University, 800-621-8890. WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com is our email address. Send a tweet at WEKUEST. I want to get Jim Waters in here, but Ed Poe, do you have a comment? Would you like to chime in on the potential budget impact and the what these kinds of cuts, whether it's $1 million and before June, $9 million next year, what that could mean for Kentucky State?
Well, you know, you start talking about a million here, 8 million here, and all of a sudden we're talking real money. The fact of the matter is that higher education has been going through this cycle of cutbacks for years and years, and I don't think it's anything that Kentucky State University hasn't foreseen coming. And really, they have done their share of cutting back and reducing costs and eliminating access whenever and wherever possible. The key, in my opinion, to the university not only continuing but thriving is to engage the Franklin County community and to get the community on board with the university and working together to move the university forward. We have to find a way of melding the history and the heritage of Kentucky State University with the reality and the practicality and the adaptability that is required for the institution to go forward in the future.
So you're saying that impact has been very local on Frankfort, Franklin County. I mean, why not reaching out to the entire Commonwealth? Why not reaching out to Western Kentucky? Why not reaching out to Bowling Green and Northern Kentucky? Is the impact really very focused?
Okay, I'm not sure I understand.
I guess I'm thinking, is not Kentucky State University is as valuable to people in Paducah and Pikeville as it is to Frankfort and Franklin County, or has it been a very focused a service that it has provided over the years?
Well, I think the university provides a value statewide because the graduates who come out of that university, most of them have a tendency not only to reside in the other parts of the Commonwealth where they have performed and have distinguished themselves. But I think overall the institution itself has meaning statewide in graduating individuals who are seeking a higher education and who want to achieve not only on a local basis but can go out and do things on a statewide and a national level.
Jim Waters of the Bluegrass Institute, let's chime in here. You've heard the potential impact on Kentucky State University and, in general, a supporter of the reallocation of state funds. What are the possibilities for the continuance of the service of an institution such as KSU?
Well, I think when we talk about outcome-based funding, I wanted to say that I think it's really important that the university presidents come together and decide what those factors are. I mean, I think there's some common sense things here. Obviously, I think we have about a 55% graduation rate in higher ed, which is not necessarily that bad because you have a lot of students that decide they don't, you know, that maybe college education isn't for them. Maybe they're going to do something else.
When you say we, the state, the Commonwealth,
the Commonwealth
in general.
Okay. I think there are things like that, though, graduation rates and placement, job placement, and those things that are just kind of common sense factors that we're all looking at. But I think the university presidents want this to work well. I think they understand that if they can tell their stories about the aquaculture program, for example, about the land based grants, that history. About how we are providing engineering students, for example, engineers or scientists, you know, in these STEM areas that we're going to be competing with globally. You know, our students aren't just going to be competing with graduates from Tennessee or Indiana. They're going to be competing with worldwide in the global marketplace. So I think they're committed to this. From what I understand, the university presidents really want – they believe in outcome-based, and they want to see that also in throughout our education system. And I don't think we've had enough of that, but I think they're going to do a good job of coming up with a way of assessing how dollars are being spent. And I credit the governor and the university presidents with, you know, the governor didn't try to force on the universities what those outcomes are going to be. He's just saying we have to have some evidence here that our dollars are working, and there is evidence. It's just sometimes it doesn't get told, I think. So I think that's important. And the other thing is, you know, the governor, he said we had $2 billion of requested funding beyond the current budget, what was currently budgeted. We had additional $2 billion from different government agencies, different entities for additional funding this year. So, you know, with our financial situation and a limited amount of dollars, I do think another point that was brought up, and I think we do need to talk about economic growth in our state. And if we have true economic growth in Kentucky, I think it will benefit universities as well. I think there will be more funding for, especially for programs that are being very successful in placing students and providing the employment needs and workforce needs of the state. So I think we're on the right track here. The funding, it's tough because, you know, we've kicked some of these problems down the road. You know, the pension issues, some of the other issues, we kicked that down the road. Tax reform's been kicked down the road. So now the can is finally stopping. We've kicked the can down the road and it's stopping. And there has to be some tough decisions made. I'm sympathetic to our universities because I think they're a key to our success as a future, as a state. And I actually think there needs to be more look taken at how we're funding some of the K-12 public dollars. You know, I think there needs to be more evidence that those dollars are being productive.
I want to get to listeners. Don Lyons, I know you've got a comment. If we can, let me get a caller on the line here. Let's talk to Drew from Berea. And thank you, Drew, for calling in. Go ahead. If you'll offer your comment, we'd be glad to hear from you.
Well, first I want to apologize if I sound funny. I have a cold as well. So.
Welcome to the club, yeah.
I just wanted to speak. I'm the president of the farmers market here in Berea. I have been for about 4 years. I've dealt with a lot of universities and institutions, and KSU has by far been the most beneficial and the most helpful to farmers that I deal with. They offer a series of really great grants. They do a lot of training, and they're really easy to deal with, especially for small producers. And you guys have talked a lot about their benefit extending beyond Frankfort, and it really does. It extends all the way down here, at least. So I just wanted to speak to that.
All right, Drew, thank you. Thank you for being part of the show. And Don Lyons, let me ask you to chime in on the comments we just heard from Jim Waters.
Well, again, I agree with what Jim is saying, and I think most of us would agree that there has to be some measure of accountability. It changes as time progresses, and at this point in time, all of the universities and their leaders have come to the reality that performance-based funding is here. The question is, when do you implement it and to what degree, and do you phase in or do you just go whole hog, quote unquote, at once? So Mr. Burse, as well as the administrators of Kentucky State and others, understand that, hey, that's the deal. And whatever the criteria, and again, it was raised by Dr. Thompson earlier, the institutions and the presidents had come together and configured what could possibly be considered to be the model, the initial model for performance funding. So, you know, that's there on the table. It's just a matter of implementation.
Well, Ed Poe had commented earlier that the universities were expecting the budgets to get tighter, expecting some kind of cuts to come about. So I assume Kentucky State and other institutions have been thinking ahead and strategizing what to do about funding. And Don Lyons working with the foundation at Kentucky State University, are there alternatives? Are there things being explored to bring in additional revenue? There are two sides to budgeting. One is cutting and the other is bringing in additional revenue. And
well, I would differ with Ed Poe to an extent that during this budgeting cycle, there was no planning for cuts.
Like you had a budget in place for this year.
Well, the proposals went in. And as Ed, Mr. Waters had said, Jim Waters, I'm sorry, had said, you always have more being requested than what is available and what is appropriate. That's just the game, unfortunately, the game
the
that
budget
they play.
Game.
But the bottom line is, yes, contingency-wise, if you're a good administrator or manager, you always look at both what happens if I get more money, what happens if I get less money. So consequently, because in this state, and as a result of the recession and the after effects of the recession, cuts have taken place. So you always have a little plan ready to go.
Yeah, we, you know, and I will say this, and it's a tough statement in our budget, current budget situation. There may be schools that do close. as a result in the future, or they may change. They may develop a different focus or a different emphasis. So I think there's going to be some room here for institutions to evaluate what it is they really want to do, what they want to be, and I don't think there's going to be existence just for the sake of existence. I don't think Kentucky State exists just for – I think we've heard about some things they do that are unique. So I think – but there may be schools that if they're just there to exist and soak up tuition dollars, you know, I think the taxpayers are going to say, well, you know, what value are you really providing?
In the minute we have remaining, so when will we know if Kentucky State is going to survive this funding crisis?
Kentucky State will survive. That's okay. The bottom line. The approach that Mr. Burse took was to be an advocate for proactive speech as opposed to reactive. In the past, and I can go back to 1914, there have always been forces or entities that said Kentucky State shouldn't exist for this or not or the other. And we have been told those things. This time, we said, okay, if ABC happens, then Y and Z will take place. But the effort that's underway, talking with the governor, talking with legislative leaders, and again, Kentucky State's not in this by itself. You got all the other state colleges, and you got all these cabinet agencies. So there's work down in the halls of the Capitol, day and night, compromise, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, one point that most people don't know and don't realize is that in the budget that was proposed, there's $1 billion of unappropriated or unassigned monies that wasn't placed anywhere.
So we don't know where that's going to go yet.
Right.
We're going to have to keep our eyes on what happens in the next couple of months as General Assembly wraps up this year's
Sunday,
session.
And Sunday, the House of Representatives begins to, as they say, mark up their edition of the budget.
Yeah, real quickly, I'd just like to add that in the last couple of years, the city of Frankfort has proclaimed Kentucky State University to be Frankfort's university, and Franklin County has proclaimed the university to be the county's university.
Thank you, Ed Bowe. Thank you, Don Lyons. Thank you, Jim Waters. Thank you, Aaron Thompson. Thanks for being part of this week's Eastern Standard. The show will repeat on Sunday evening at 6 o'clock. The podcast will be online this afternoon at weku.fm. And thank you for tuning in.